I believe the last time you were here was the day before the Brexit referendum. So here we are again with a market very much focused on politics. We talked earlier about the Fed. Are they a factor at all in the noise that's taking place?
I mean, certainly not in the last few sessions. I think that pretty much everybody had decided that the Fed would do nothing today. They did nothing today. They made absolutely minimal changes to the language of their text. I think most people believe that they will do something in December, but we do have a 25 basis point rate hike coming, unless we have surprisingly weak economic data or surprisingly weak global markets. And you know, I think that's a reasonable assumption to make.
Michael Risch in Hong Kong. At the end of the day, using that word some, which everybody's now taken as the nod towards there being a rate hike next month, is it convinced you as well? And really, it's all priced in, isn't it, surely?
Yes and yes. I mean, I think whatever word they used, we would have convinced ourselves that it was meaningful. You know, when I went through the text, the thing that struck me was that they were being as descriptive as possible as opposed to being prescriptive. I'm sure that Janet Yellen doesn't want to join the head of the FBI in the dock at being charged with, you know, affecting an election. I think they were very careful with their language. But you know, I think this is a committee with a great deal of inertia behind its decisions. And I think they've been edging towards a December hike for several months. And, you know, unless something changes, I think that's what's going to happen.
What do you make of the way that the bond market has been behaving? We had a backup in yields over the last several sessions. Things have stabilized a bit here around 1.80 on the 10-year. How much of this is the market saying, you know, the Feds and other central banks are really out of bullets? Or is it a matter of global growth kind of picking up?
You know, I think it's the latter, and I think it's also a reflection of the fact that the global bond market was irrationally priced around the Brexit decision. I think there was a massive rush into long-duration instruments, you know, across the globe in late June and early July, and you've had a very reasonable backing up in global rates since then. It hasn't just been a U.S. phenomenon. You know, one thing I would say is that the safe haven nature of treasuries has been minimal in the last few weeks. We've had it's not a big correction in the S&P, roughly 3% decline from its October high. And you know, U.S. 10-year is still above, 1.8%. Mm-hmm. My feeling is that June low in long-term yields globally was a very important inflection point. And regardless of what the Fed brings to the table in December, I think that yields are going to find their way higher in the months ahead.
I've talked a bit about the Fed. Let's not go there at the moment. Let's get back to what's happening, which is causing all this anxiety and volatility on the markets. We're talking, of course, of Trump versus Clinton. How does this play out for you? And, you know, where do you put your money as this volatility perhaps even worsens?
We don't tend to do a great deal just philosophically around these sorts of issues. They are unknowable. And you know, we believe that, you know, even if the market was to get a surprise and we have, you know, I guess, the risk of what we call a Trump dump on our hands next week. I think it would be a fairly ephemeral process. I mean, that's something we learned from Brexit. It is possible to go into an election and get a shocking result. It certainly was the case with Brexit in June, and still come out the other side with, you know, markets roughly where they were before it was even a possibility. And you know, our view right now is that there are some quite important trends in global markets. I think there's a general trend of outperformance for emerging markets. We think that long-term interest rates globally bottomed earlier this year, and we will hold those beliefs next Wednesday, regardless of which candidate has been elected president, assuming that we have a clear result.
So your bullishness then on EM, I would imagine, is on the bet for a stable dollar. But I want to go back to this issue of volatility. We asked the question earlier in the program as to whether or not you would go long volatility at this point. I mean, with a VIX slightly below 20.
Yeah, it's not a no-brainer. I think you have to have the quote-unquote wrong result in order for you to make money next week, and you'll have to be fairly quick on the trigger. It's certainly possible for the VIX to go from 20 to 30 or 20 to 40, but you know, the likelihood is, as we've seen time and again, it'll be back in the mid to low teens. Extremely quickly. you know, we already have the front of the VIX curve above its second month. That typically is a sign that the volatility pricing has gone a little bit too far. As I say, it is certainly possible to buy volatility today and make money next week, but the likelihood is that it's a losing trade.
Michael, we had, of course, Lord Hailsham, Quentin Hogg, years ago say that if democracy changed anything, they'd abolish it. Now, with the Brexit vote and this one coming up, do you think that that statement is fundamentally false?
No, I think that there's a general issue out there, a dissatisfaction amongst the general population with the way that they have been governed. And I don't think this issue's going away anytime soon. And, you know, it may lead to some unfortunate choices being made at the ballot box. But you know, I think there's a genuine problem with governance in much of the developed world today, and a genuine dissatisfaction amongst amongst populations, and hopefully that's resolved over time, and you know, somehow with a better process of governing populations, rather than a straightforward lurch into populism. But you know, I am a citizen of the UK, and I've lived in the US for 25 years, and I have a deep affection for both countries, and yet I can understand why in both cases the population has been dissatisfied.
In terms of the currency market, a lot of the behavior, we were talking about the weakness in the peso, which anytime Mr. Trump shows up in the polls with a kind of a stronger position, the peso weakens. But the other thing that's been happening, we've seen, it appears to me, some kind of flight to quality into the yen. I mean, do you expect this to continue?
Probably. I mean, I think that the election fault lines are in place. And every time Trump goes up in the polls, the short-term reaction will be, I think, to short the peso, more short the peso than buy the yen. The yen hasn't moved that much. The peso, ironically, was a Brexit currency. But the strange thing when you look at Mexico is that it has a local equity market very close to its all-time highs. It's an export economy, which is actually, by and large, being helped by the depreciation of its currency. And again, my inclination would be if Trump were elected president next week, you know, I would be buying that dislocation in the peso. Mexico looks extremely cheap for a US dollar investor right now.
Very quickly here, Michael, do you think Trump does have a chance?
Sure. I think the estimates I've seen is it's a 70-30 election at this point in favor of Clinton. I think that's about right. And I think that's close enough in this kind of an environment where polling is perhaps less reliable than in other elections to say he has a real chance.